Good afternoon. Welcome to today's Retail Online Integration Webinar, How to Build Trust Online Live, sponsored by Trustee. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I'll be your moderator for today's event. Today, backed by popular demand, nationally recognized landing page optimization expert Tim Ash will lay out his top four secrets to building instant trust online. However, this time around, Tim will be reviewing websites based on his four secrets. Trustees Andrea Stenzel will also discuss how to build trust on your mobile sites and on social networking platforms. Before we get started, let me point out a few tips on how to make the most of today's live presentation. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help button at the bottom of the console or let us know via the Ask a Question box. Second, make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can see and take part in any interactive portions of today's presentation. To get a PDF version of the slide presentation for future reference, click on the Download Slides button on the console. If you're enjoying this webinar and would like to spread the word to your peers, send an email invitation directly from the console by clicking the Invite a Colleague button. You can also give us your feedback at any time during the hour by clicking the survey button. The survey will also be distributed at the end of today's webinar. During today's presentation, our speakers will be answering select questions. Use the Ask a Question feature on the console to submit your questions for consideration in advance at any time. If you leave the presentation at any time, you can access the entire webinar on demand for the next 90 days via the same link you used to watch the presentation today. After that, the webinar can be viewed from the Retail Online Integration website, www.retailonlineintegration.com/webinar. Finally, we encourage you to tweet about this webinar. Please use hashtag ROIWebinar when doing so. Take it away, Tim.
Thanks very much, Melissa. Appreciate that. Hello, everybody. I know we have a lot of folks here. Some of you may have been on a previous webinar that Andreas and I did about this topic. We're going to spice it up today by doing some live site critiques in the middle of our Q&A. A lot of you submitted URLs, and hopefully we'll get to yours. So I'm just going to just take it away and do this at 78 RPM. I have a lot to cover. So I want to talk today about the four secrets of building instant trust online. Now, seems like an important thing if you think about it. We're social creatures, right? We crave trust and relationship. And lately I've been thinking about trust as a series of concentric ripples that go out from us. So we accord the most trust to the people closest to us, the inner circle. I mean, this is a picture of my kids when they're a little bit younger. This is our family, our closest friends. These are people we've laid down in front of a train for. But then the trust gets a little bit more diffuse. So, for example, you know, our colleagues at work, well, we may trust them, we can respect them, we may like them, but there's really kind of, I would say we wouldn't necessarily agree with their taste in movie reviews or music or something like that, or tell them our deepest secrets. And then trust goes out in a kind of further concentric ripple, and once we get past our immediate circle of people that we know, then we're really talking about crowds. Now, let's imagine you went to a football game and the opposing team was, you know, arch rivals were in town, and so would you trust not to throw a beer can at your head from behind you if he rose up? Well, probably not. I mean, you're not extending a lot of trust to him. But still, you know, we extend some minimum amount of trust in daily situations, just kind of inevitably. We expect that if there's a red light, somebody's not going to run us down when we're crossing the street, or somebody will hold the door open for us even if they're a total stranger, and so on. But online, it's a little bit more difficult. So when you're building instant trust online, you have to overcome two hurdles. The first is that you have to do it pretty much instantly. Now, what I mean by that is literally instantly. There's research that says people will form a first impression of your landing page or website within a 20th of a second. And that's about as fast as visual processing in the brain works. So it's subliminal, it's automatic, and worst of all, it actually carries over to their likelihood of converting later on. So that first impression once formed is very, very hard to overcome. And the second prerequisite for building trust online is it must be done anonymously. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, again, in any face-to-face interaction, I know something about the person. I can make certain assumptions. I can eyeball them. I can smell them, look at them, and I know quite a bit of information about their demeanor, their emotional tone, and so on. But on the Internet, we don't have that advantage. I mean, think about it. You have these anonymous visitors showing up on your site at all hours of the day and night. They could be from different time zones or countries, and you don't really know that much about them. And even if you kind of knew their, some people might be saying to themselves, well, I know their IP address and I can geo-target them and I know what version of the browser they're using and their screen resolution. Well, that's all wonderful, but you probably don't know whether they had a fight with their boyfriend or girlfriend that morning, or if they have indigestion from a big dinner they just ate, or if their dog just chewed up their couch cushions, or the exact specific psychology of each person. And it's much harder to get that when you're online. To make things worse, they don't know you either. Now, this is the part that I want to focus on, because you can overcome this to some degree. So they're out of your control. You don't know anything about them, but you and the knowledge of you is in your control. So I'm going to talk about four time-tested ways to build trust and kind of apply that to doing it online and do the translation for you, if you will, and talk about doing it in the context of online. All right, let's talk about the first pillar of building trust, appearance. Let me ask you a simple question. Would you let your daughter date this guy? Most of you are probably laughing. It's not really meant to be a facetious question. Why is it so laughable, though? Well, we judge a book by its cover. Appearance is important. We look to the environment for quality. We look to the environment for distinct things, attractiveness, and things like that. And so we care about grooming and appearance, and it sends very powerful signals. You know, the old notion of dress for success, for example, or fake it till you make it, because appearance really does matter. And as you saw, we will make that first impression in a 20th of a second based on whatever information we have available. So let's see how this plays out in online. Let me ask you a simple question. So you came to this website. Would you buy a grand piano from this company? They sell grand pianos. How about it? Any takers out there? I'm guessing not too many of you would plunk down $25,000 to buy a grand piano from this company. And the reason is obvious. The web design is really dated. It's circa 1995. I mean, it was okay back then to have a few links and a picture and some reverse color text and so on, but it's not okay now. Now, close your eyes. Let's do a little thought experiment. Now, I know I can't see you through the webinar, but still, just kind of close your eyes. Don't look at the screen or the picture and listen to this. This company is the largest seller of grand pianos in the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area. They've been around for over 25 years, and they are authorized repair and warranty service centers for Baldwin and Yamaha and Steinway and all of the major brands. And if you're not happy with your piano after 90 days, they'll be glad to just take it away, no questions asked, out of your parlor. Okay, now open your eyes and look again at that page. And now, if I ask you, would you buy a grand piano from this company, think about your answer. Now, many of you may have been swayed by my talking out loud here on the webinar, but the reality of it is visual information is pretty strong. We're still looking at the same old but ugly site, and chances are you don't trust these people because of their appearance. And they haven't gone to the trouble of creating any of that trust on the page. So the appearance actually undermines what they're trying to do. Here's another perfect example. Barbells, anyone? Would you buy a barbell from this company? I mean, this site is awful. It's a visual assault on the senses. It's the visual equivalent of having somebody shoot a submachine gun at your face at point-blank range. You just want to leave this page. And by the way, you can't even see the animated blinking text on the page, which makes it even more annoying. Now, normally, you know, I'd bash any graphic designers that were involved in the creation of the page, but clearly I can't even do that here because I doubt any self-respecting graphic designer would have been involved in a project like this at all. But the point is, again, the first appearance and just the amateurish nature of this site undermines any chance of you actually transacting or interacting with it. Here's another example. I'm based in San Diego, which had a little bit of rain today, but it's still in the 60s and partly cloudy now, and pretty nice place to be. There are a lot of boaty people here. The America's Cup was based here when it won. And so near my neighborhood in San Diego, there's this company called Cabrillo Yacht Sales, and this is really their website. Six-figure yacht, anyone? Seven-figure yacht, anyone? That's what they're expecting you to bite on, even though the site is horrible. I mean, they have this animated, you can't really see the animation, but this the U.S. flag there in the center of the page is, you know, is a flash animation. Well, that makes me want to buy from them. Or how about the stock photography from a helicopter shot of San Diego Bay there in the lower right-hand corner of the picture showing the marina? And there's nothing really distinctive or high quality or credible about these folks. And they're trying to sell a really, really high-end luxury item. And appearances in this case don't lie. They come off looking like clowns, really. So if I had to kind of sum up this whole appearance notion, don't get disqualified based solely on how you look. That's the bottom line. Every year, every day, really, almost, the professionalism standards for websites and landing pages keeps going up, up, and up. And you have to keep up with it. What was okay 3 or 4 years ago is definitely not okay right now. And we haven't redesigned our site in probably about that long, and we're in the middle of a redesign. So check back in a couple of months, and ours will be substantially different. Nobody's immune to this, really. It's better to be overdressed than underdressed for the situation. The other comment I want to make is about sparseness and neatness. A lot of us, even if you have a high level of visual polish to the design itself, we kind of clutter up everything. And I think as a design aesthetic, what you should strive for is a sense of almost zen-like stillness on the page so that important calls to action can arise out of that. So give people room to breathe. Don't fill up every square inch of real estate on your screen with something just because it's not filled up right now. And this visual clarity kind of follows into the final notion I want to talk about, which is organization and clarity in your head. Make sure you're clear about what calls to action you have and why you have them there. Give people a limited, small set of choices. It's up to you to organize the world for me, so when I land on your landing page, I don't have to think about it. In fact, Steve Krug wrote a fantastic book called Don't Make Me Think. It's kind of the standard for website usability and website design. And that pretty much sums it all up. Don't make me think. If I have to think, I probably won't go through the effort because I live in this kind of, you know, quick, infinite amount of information available world, and my attention is what you're competing for. So don't force my attention to focus down because I'm not in a focus mode when I'm in front of a web browser. Okay, let's move on to the second pillar of building trust online, and that is transactional assurances. Now, when we're on the Internet, because we lack that personal relationship with someone on the other end of the line, as it were, or on the other end of the website, you know, we want assurances because the things that are going through our heads are, will I get spammed? Will I get the product delivered on time? Can I return it if I don't like it? All of these anxieties, will someone steal my identity? I mean, these are real problems. And, you know, of course, Andreas will talk about Trustee and, you know, how to, they're really at the forefront of some of this transactional assurances on the web. But I just want to give you kind of a flavor for it. if you think about it, for example, a lot of us put trust symbols on our website. Now, I know this is a kind of a small screenshot to see, but at the bottom of this Smart Bargains page, way at the bottom, you see Better Business Online, and we accept Visa, and we ship by UPS, and all of these wonderful trust marks, but they're way below the fold. So even though people are more used to scrolling these days, chances are only about 15% will see those trust marks. So they're really kind of throwing trust away on this page because 85% of the people coming to this page will not ever see those trust marks. So you have to put your trust mark, the transactional stuff, up front. Here's kind of an extreme counter example. Now, this is an older screenshot I took of the PetSmart site, but I was really impressed when I saw this. In the upper left, where you'd normally have your logo, they had the HackerSafe symbol, which is now called McAfee Secure. They were bought by McAfee. But it's a transactional trust mark. And to compensate for that, they moved their logo from the middle of the header to the from the left side of the header to the middle of the header and kind of supersized it. But you instantly, without looking at the rest of the page, get this two-part message, which is, we're safe to shop with, we're PetSmart. In other words, they're so proud of their transactional security that they actually put that ahead of their brand. That's a very powerful statement to make. So if you're going to use trust marks, use the key best ones in each category and put them prominently on the page, not necessarily in the upper left here because that breaks a pretty strong usability convention, but nevertheless, don't bury them down lower in the page. So basically, if somebody's ready to open their wallet or to fill out the form or whatever it is you're asking them to do, you don't want them to have any hesitations at that point of action. And so you have to relieve their anxieties before they happen. For example, many of you may have an e-commerce catalog and you start mentioning your payment methods in the cart or in the checkout process. Well, that's kind of too late. I want to know that you accept credit cards or Visa, American Express, maybe PayPal or something all the time. I want to know it on your homepage because I don't want to get into your checkout process and then have the anxiety of thinking about whether you accept the payment method that I want to use. So you put that all up front everywhere. Same goes with data security and privacy and your policies and guarantees of what happens after I transact. Can I back out of it? Can I reverse? Do I have a recourse? Can I talk to real people if I have a problem? All of those kind of things should also be addressed up front. Don't make me hunt for it. Don't say I have it at the bottom of my menu and my footer. I have it says policies and return policy. No, put it up front in the content on the page in context. So when I'm thinking about it, that's when I kind of relieve my own objection and don't worry about it anymore. All right, next I want to talk about another very important pillar of trust. Now imagine you got up this morning and you weren't feeling real well. You came into the doctor and they said, you know what, bad news, you need to have your gallbladder removed. It's not optional, has to come out in about an hour. And this guy walks into the room, the guy in this picture, and says, I'm your doctor. Let me ask you a question. I know we can't do a poll or a show of hands, but I suspect that a significant percentage of you would be just fine if this man walked in and was the one that was going to perform your operation. Uh-oh, I have some bad news for you. He's not a doctor. He's a model, and a stock photo was taken of him wearing a white lab coat with a stethoscope draped over his neck. But do you see how even the trappings of authority kind of confer power on this person? The uniform makes the person. And he looks trustworthy. He looks old enough to have some experience and been around the block, but young enough not to have his fingers shake when he's cutting into my gallbladder. So it's all good. Well, you know, people are just conditioned. We're sort of pack animals and hierarchical animals to give in to recognized authority. Let me show you another example. If I asked you, who are these people right here in this picture? Well, some of you may have deduced that these are the U.S. Supreme Court justices, the highest law of the land. Well, that's certainly true, but what if I just said they're old people in black robes? Well, that's equally true because the robes in this case make them who they are. They make them Supreme Court justices. If you took them out of the robes, then they're just nine old people sitting there. Now, I'm not, no disrespect to older people. I hope to be really, really old one day and live a good long time. But I'm just saying that it's the trappings of authority and their robes that invest them with this almost mystical significance or this ritual significance. Another example is, you know, what if you met this man on the street? Would you be likely to comply with his wishes and be persuaded by him if he was asking you to do something? Yeah. And it's not just because he carries a taser and a gun. It's because he has the uniform on. So how do we dress up what we're doing on the web in these trappings of authority, and how do we borrow trust from authority figures? Well, here's an example. One of our clients, we did a big landing page test for, it was a company called Real Age. And they, you can take this Real Age quiz, and they ask you a bunch of lifestyle and health questions, and at the end of it, they'll tell you your quote-unquote real age. And so not your chronological age, but rather how well you've maintained your body and your biological age. And so one of the things that they ask for in their questionnaire is a very detailed personal history. Do you smoke? Do you party too hard? Do you exercise? Are you overweight? Do you have, you know, various kinds of health risks? Most people would not voluntarily give that kind of information up. We have real strong laws on medical privacy and things like that. The government actually gets involved and regulates and protects all of that. And yet they're asking us to give all of that information up just to get a little real age calculation. It's actually pretty cool. And I was pleasantly surprised to learn that I'm apparently younger than my chronological age, so that's good news. But the way that we were able to kind of move the needle in this test that we did for him was adding what you see there in the highlighted area on the left, which the media mentions as seen in. Now, I'm sure most of you have never heard of Real Age before I started talking about them, but I'm sure you have heard of CNN and New York Times and Fox News and the Today Show and so on. Those are media brands. They spent hundreds of millions of dollars and decades drumming those brands into our heads, so they confer this kind of authority or halo effect onto the page. In fact, when we did this test, there were several things on the page that ended up changing, and this is the winning page that I'm showing you. But this new design with the trust symbols added in the form of media mentions performed 40% better. So same people coming through, 40% more completions of the head end of this process. Here's another quick example. This is for lead generation. Now, it's for SF Video, which is one of the premier DVD and Blu-ray duplication firms. They focus on large volume DVD duplication. And their lead form is on the left-hand side in the gray, and it takes up, I don't know, maybe a quarter of the page. The biggest part of the page is taken up by their client logos. And so I bet you anything, your thought track, if you are looking for DVD duplication and you landed on this page, goes something like this. Wow, look, they work with Walmart and Nike and Microsoft and The Gap and AT&T. I hope that they'll take on my little itty-bitty duplication job. I hope they handle companies as small as mine. Because, folks, let's face it, is there any question that they can do the job? No. Well, let me ask you something, though. You've never heard of probably SF Video before I showed you this, their slide here, this screenshot. So how is it that you came to that conclusion so quickly? Well, it's the power of conferring authority. So in a business-to-business setting, one of the most effective ways to do that is to have your marquee client logos. And we actually did a test. You know, we said, okay, well, isn't that kind of overkill? Look at how many we have there. So we just ran one column of them down the right-hand side, had only six of the top companies there in that list in a single column. And I'm proud to say that we were able to lower conversions by over a third. In other words, this version performed 58% better than one with fewer trust logos. So overkill is a good thing, if it's the right kind of overkill. Now, let me show you an example. This is a lead generation form for a debt negotiation company. So this company sells off leads. You're in debt, you know, fill out this form. We'll help you negotiate with your creditors and so on. And one of the things they had was near the bottom of the form, they had some trust symbols in the form of associations and trade associations that they belong to. Now, that's fine, but they're buried at the bottom of the page. We did a multivariate test In other words, we tested a lot of different things simultaneously on the page. And but since they sell these leads off. In other words, they've already invested in the media to drive the traffic there. It's just a question of, do you fill out the form? Now, there are lots of changes to this page. It looks very different than the original one. But this winning page prominently featured those trust marks in the form of industry associations. And you know what? Even if you could, you know, read this slide up close, you know, the first one is D&B or Dun & Bradstreet. If you...
My apologies to the audience. We seem to have lost audio with the speaker. We're going to try to troubleshoot the problem. Just bear with us for a few seconds, please. I think we're having a little... hi, everybody. It's Melissa Campanelli. We are having some technical difficulties, so I think what we're going to have is have Andreas from Trustee kind of start. And so, Andreas, you want to jump in here and give your presentation?
Hi, certainly. Let me ask first whether you can hear me or not.
Hi, everybody. Yeah, it's Tim Ash. I'm hopefully back now.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
we're
great.
Back. Sorry, everybody. Some technical difficulties here. But, Tim, I think some of our listeners would like you to start from the debt relief example.
Sure. Is it did you hear the first slide, or can we start on the results slide?
Well, maybe from the beginning of the debt relief example. I'm not sure.
You bet.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So I'll go back to the example I was talking about. So, again, apologize for the technical difficulties. The call got dropped. This is an example of a debt negotiation lead generation company. In other words, they sell off leads for debt negotiation, and they want you to complete this form. And they're asking for personal information, including, you know, the amount of debt you have and so on. At the bottom of the page, they have these trust marks in the form of trade associations that they belong to. We did a multivariate test and changed a lot of things on the page as a result. This was the winning page. It performed a lot better, 51% better, which was $48 million a year to this company. In other words, they had a sunk cost and whatever media they were paying for to drive traffic here, and it's just a question of did you fill out the form or not. And one of the things that we did to improve performance, as you can see in this design, was to promote those trust marks to the right-hand side. And most of them you've never heard of, and this is what I call the butterfly collection. The trust marks themselves, in some cases, don't even matter. The fact that they belong to these trade associations and you don't know what they are, it's the aggregate effect of just having them visually be there as little markers. So it's kind of, if you've ever seen one of those pretty wooden boxes with glass and the pinned butterflies underneath them, I mean, it looks beautiful. It could be the most common moth on the planet, but as long as it has bright colors on its wings, that's good enough. And that's kind of what we're seeing here. We don't have time to evaluate the actual validity of some of these trust marks, so we just take their presence as an indication that the company is proud of what they're doing. Here's an example off of our own current homepage. As you can see down the right-hand side, we have trust marks in the form of our client logos, and that's very powerful. Let me show you one more while we're talking about this. Here's a landing page for an email campaign done by Credo Mobile. They're a socially conscious cell phone company. Their big claim to fame isn't that they're big, it's that they give away a percentage of all of their proceeds to progressive causes and charities. So we did what we call an express review of their page. We went into it in detail via online meeting, told them what was wrong with it, and with their design team collaborated on redoing a new page, or what we call an express fix. And, you know, you could say that this new design is basically just a more boring version of the old one. I mean, we think it addressed a lot of the conversion issues. But one of the keys here was having along the right-hand side the list of charities that they gave money to, Greenpeace, Planned Parenthood, Doctors Without Borders. Again, most of you have probably never heard of Credo, but you have heard of those organizations. So why does this matter, or how much does this matter? A lot. The difference between the original page that I showed you, that gray and orange one, and the one with the trust symbols in the form of their the organizations they donate to was 84%. Trust is huge. Trust matters a lot. All right. Well, just to kind of wrap up this section on the authority, basically borrow authority, borrow it anywhere where you can get it in the form of third-party reviews and awards, marquee clients if you're a business-to-business company, media mentions, trade associations, you belong to anything like that, where you can put a visual mark of transferring outside authority to you. Think of how much people have heard of you versus how much they've thought of or may know about these other brands, and you'll see the power of that instantly. All right, well, there's one final pillar of trust, if you've been counting around the last one, and that is the behavior of your peers. Let me ask you something. Do you think that these people care what you think? Well, that's kind of a trick question. I mean, not a trick question, but a obvious answer, no, they don't. Unless you're in a prison yard in Stockton, California, you probably don't really care. They don't care what you think. And you probably don't care what they think. If you happen to be in San Francisco, south of Market, and you run into these wannabe hipsters, they don't care what you think, and you don't care what they think. I think they need a haircut, but that's just because I'm bald. Personal predilection here, but my point is if you ever have any kids of your own and you have teenage children, you know they're influenced by their peer group. They're not influenced by people that they consider to be very different from them in the cultural tribe sense. So imagine, for example, if you were on the Tokyo subway one day and you heard there was an outbreak of avian flu and you saw everybody in the Tokyo subway wearing these face masks. So would you wear a mask? Now, if we took an informal poll, many of you would say yes, you'd consider wearing a mask. And you know why? Because it's the behavior of your peers. You're seeing people around you, well-dressed, on the same mode of transportation, going to their work, acting like us. But folks, there's no evidence that avian flu is in any way attenuated by wearing face masks in public. None. None whatsoever. But that's the power of peer pressure and group thinking. We look to our peers for cues for our own behavior. And it's a very, very powerful instinct. Let me show you how this translates into the web. Now, earlier, about a year ago, I was interested in downloading the latest version of the Mozilla browser. And I came to this download statistics page, and I was really struck by how effectively they were taking advantage of this kind of peer pressure and social proof, if you will. One of the things that you see on the page is a giant number near the lower right, and your eye is drawn to it by the Firefox logo. It says Firefox 3.6 has been downloaded 543 million times. Now, this is about 6 weeks after they launched this version, so think about it. Half a billion people on this planet downloaded that browser already in 6 weeks. Wow. So if you have any thoughts about should you download it, I think they'd pretty much be answered by that. But they do something even more powerful. The map on the left, it's a little bit hard to see, but it had these flashing yellow and orange dots anytime somebody in the world downloaded the browser, which showed their location. And I happened to be in Europe at the time, so this was in Germany, and so the middle of Europe is lit up with a bunch of different downloads happening in Central Europe right there and then when I'm on. So if I'm thinking about downloading, it's very powerful proof that people just like me in the same place in the world are doing it right now, and that's very, very compelling stuff. Here's another example. I was listening to Pandora Internet Radio one day, and up came this little pop-up. It's a little hard to see at the top of the screen, so I'll enlarge it. It said, "Hi, Tim. Pandora is using Facebook to personalize your experience. Do you want us to personalize it for you?" And I said, "Yes, absolutely." And then when I was looking at another page, it basically said, "Hey, there is this person," and it pulled information in from my Facebook profile, "this friend of yours also likes this artist." Well, that's pretty powerful stuff, because in the context of liking artists and me giving them a thumbs up or down or buying the track for $1.99, I'm likely to be influenced by my closest peers' musical taste. Similarly, a little side wiki popped up in my browser, and that's a kind of a little comment window on the left. If you have the Google toolbar loaded and you have a Google account, you can leave comments about any page on the web, and you can't get rid of them as the author of the site. They're just there, and it's a running commentary about your page from other people with Google accounts. And it serves, again, you talk about the behavior of your peers. These are people that have been on this page, and they left a comment. Very powerful in-context example of social proof. So to kind of sum up, what you want to do is tap into this peer pressure and our willingness to be influenced by people and show that through large objective numbers. Since the dawn of time, how many people have used your service or your product? And their likeness to me. So if you're going to have a review, don't have generic reviews. If you're going to have a review about a particular item in your e-commerce catalog, have reviews of that item. And that's why these review aggregator sites like Opinions and so on are proliferating, because it's very powerful, if I'm looking for a particular model of digital camera, to know what other people who have bought it think. They are very much like me if they're considering that same model. Okay, well, I've gone through everything at a 78 RPM. I just want to give you a little bit of background information about where this perspective comes from. My company, SiteTuners, has worked with a lot of companies over the years, and we do conversion reviews and consulting best practices engagements. We also write test plans and implement full-service landing page tests for clients. We work with large and small companies. I want to extend a couple of special offers to the listeners of this webinar. We have something called an Express Review, which you can check out on our site, or at express-review.com, and we will take you through on a go-to meeting and critique your landing page, which I'm going to give you a little taste of here in a minute, live, a very structured format, you get the recording of that as your deliverable. Finally, you may be aware of the Conversion Conference. This is an international series that's just focused on making your website and your landing pages more effective and persuasive. The next show is coming up here in about a month in San Francisco. Hope to see you all there. And for listeners of this webinar, and I think this is good for about a week, as I recall, so $250 off if you use the promo code CCW949. And if you download this PowerPoint deck, you'll be able to save all of that information. And finally, if you want to get a hold of me, there are lots of ways to do that. Here's some of my favorites. in addition to the direct ways. Feel free to tune into the Webmaster Radio LPO, Landing Page Optimization Show. That's weekly. I interview thought leaders from conversion improvement space. Write a regular column on ClickZ or Wiz Visibility Magazine, Website Magazine. Anyway, hope to continue the conversation with you on Twitter or Facebook. And at this point, I just want to throw it back to Andreas.
Great. Thank you very much, Tim. Incredible insights, as always. I know I learned a ton. So I'll move through so we can get into the site evaluations. I have a few slides here to share with you. And first off, a little bit about Trustee. Our name speaks trust. We've been doing this for 14 years, since 97. We have around 4,000 customers globally. And one unique thing is that some of these customer logos here have our Trustee seals on and around their sites and in their emails and newsletters. And over a million people a month visiting these client sites actually click on the Trustee seal onto our validation pages, which monitor the kind of approval levels of the client sites, marketing activities, website activities, and so on. Our results prove that we build trust. We're growing incredibly rapidly. We have solutions for advertisers, for applications, mobile and Google apps and such. We have mobile site certifications and the traditional website certifications as well. So we protect privacy, data management, and other things for our clients here, a couple other client logos. We're going to speak a little bit about integrated campaigns and touch on the new emerging social and mobile areas that we're working with many clients with these days. And to keep things brief, I'll just move through these bullets very quickly. You can download the slides and get a recording if you wanted to go into detail on each of these. But the main idea is that integrated campaigns help build trust even faster. So consider each touch point of an integrated campaign, whether it's email, social media, or ads, as a consistent piece of your brand experience. Have it as one holistic component. Consider that your users will receive marketing messages from you, and they will reach out and look for you in other areas. So it's a two-way thing. So consistent, high-quality user experience again. And when you're building these out, consider breaking down each of these touch points to show how you can best integrate it with the other experiences. Probably movie companies are the best at this. They've had integrated campaigns for a long time, and these days they even have building campaigns. So the first ad might tell the first chapter of a story, and then on YouTube they have videos that tell a second part, and then finally on the on the movie's website, they tell the final chapter of a short story, all very tightly integrated, all building, as they know people will engage with them in different mediums in different orders. Okay, so I will go into mobile activities and briefly. Mobile's overtaken computers. This should happen this year. By the end of 2010, last year, a month ago, more than a billion mobile devices were connected to the web, and that should overtake the 1.3 billion computers that are connected to the web now. So huge shift of power from website, traditional website, to device. So consider a couple things here. We'll go into more detail, but think small. Geo-promote and consider apps. Appify your in-store experience wherever possible for those of you with retail outlets. More detail on that here. Retailers have a huge opportunity here. Mobile shoppers are a highly desirable demographic. They have a modern phone. They spend more money on data plans, and they accounted for almost 30% of all retail spending on and offline during last year's holiday season, which just ended. Okay, continuing on, here's a sample of a mobile-optimized site. This is courtesy of Steve Madden. On the left, you have your traditional site. On the right, you have your mobile-optimized site. Again, this is the think small point. So increase the size of your graphics. People won't be able to read small text. And then increase the placement and the percentage of placement of your social component. People are interested in reviews. Remember, these guys are out on the street. They could be standing in the aisles of the stores quite often or standing with a group of friends at a mall wondering where to go next. So think small, bigger graphics, fewer words, but an increased social component. Kind of building on this is a mobile app, and there are a couple pieces here. Of course, like a traditional website, you can select different things. This is, again, courtesy of Steve Madden. You can choose color, you know, search by colors and sizes. You want to integrate your brick-and-mortar components. So down at the bottom, there's a small button that says Find In-Store, so it will actually search for the closest store to you where you can get the shoes. It then, in the middle screen, asks you to opt in for the app to search your location and geo-target you. And then, again, at the end, if you approve it, it will show you a list of the stores and phone numbers and addresses and maps where you can buy these shoes. Pretty integrated experience. Lastly, the kind of trust building components for mobile commerce, real quickly, the bullets here are geolocation. You want to always allow people to opt in or opt out. This is a powerful feature for mobile commerce. They can pinpoint your location within about 30 feet these days, and it will probably get better over time. Social networking capabilities, these apps and these mobile sites are quite often sharing information with advertisers, and so people want to be able to opt in or opt out of those. And advertising plus location is a dream for marketers, but consider consumer tastes when you do this. Different companies have different audiences. So. Okay, and then for us, we do mobile app and mobile site privacy. Here's a sample from Yelp, a customer of ours, and the before and after. So this is a use of graphics. So before, you have your kind of privacy statement, your data management statements on how you use data in text, and the after shot, of course, summarizes it with kind of graphics and just short bullets in bigger, bolder text. This makes it very easy to interface while you're accessing through a device. Again, there's a lot more information on these slides, but if you're interested in the details, you can download this. So switching gears to social networks, you want to consider the like feature and proliferate that around your traditional and device marketing materials. Like was introduced April last year across all web properties. The like button's been on Facebook for many years, as we know. By July of last year, after only about 3 months, nearly 60 million people on Facebook were clicking like to at least one page a day. So consider that as a marketing vehicle in itself. There are many tips for you here, but consider leveraging the social commerce as much as you can, depending on your products. Turn your Facebook fan page into its own commerce channel. Off the wall and buy on page type tools are available. And cross promote, so you can use Facebook to promote in-store, mobile, and destination events and offers. There are a couple more of the main takeaways here. Social tools will help drive traffic to your e-commerce site and help you increase your brand presence. Okay. One thing to consider is there's an increasing consumer concern. If you've read the Wall Street Journal and New York Times over the last couple months, you see these stories almost every week now. Users are concerned about the privacy issues that come with data sharing and data proliferation on social engines. So there are a couple stats there with you, and some surprising facts are that young people are just as concerned as older people, which was an eye-opener for us here. And then the best practices for traditional websites still apply to new devices. Consider communicating the human touch, have easy-to-find, easy-to-read contact info about us pages, leadership, and pictures of humans on your devices so that people can learn about you very quickly. You want to give your visitors and customers transparency, choice, and control, so allow a preference center to opt them in or out of email, ads, other things, phone solicitations, have disclaimers on forms or anywhere where you collect information on your shopping carts for sure. You want to tell people up front what you're going to do or not do with their data. And then the privacy practices, have them easy to find, easy to read, and I'm sure you recognize many of the logos I flashed at the beginning. You can see that many of those companies have the Trustee logo right at the bottom of every page on their site. Quick note for marketing folks and for e-commerce folks, we see great uplift with our clients. They get opt-in rates that reach up into the millions. The e-commerce guys have great lift in conversion rates. Some of them have two types of lift, almost like a multiplier, where they have an increase in conversion, so more sales, and they have increases in revenue per visit, so a multiplier, more sales for more money. And with that, I'll say thank you. There's some contact info for us. I want to leave at least 10 minutes to go over the sites with Tim. So back to you, Tim.
Great. Thanks very much, Andreas. Some really targeted industry statistics. You guys definitely have your fingers on the pulse. While we're doing these quick site reviews, some of you are good enough to submit your URLs, and we grabbed your screenshots and put them in here. I'll be talking to them. Melissa, I think you're also going to field some questions in between.
Sure, definitely. See how it goes.
Okay, terrific. Let me just jump in and talk about, for example, production quality. One of the things that we talked about in terms of being trusted on the I think we're trying to pull up the slide here. Well, here's an example. This is one of the folks that submitted their URL. This is obviously a travel site, and let's examine this from a trust perspective. The thing that jumps out at me immediately is that the production quality of the site isn't very high. And again, folks, I'm sorry, I'm not known for my bedside manner, but I'm going to go through as many of these as I can. Do you trust these people? Because it says, Chloris travel you can trust, but that's making quite a big statement there. I don't know that I trust it. The production quality isn't particularly high. There's some destination shots all in the right-hand columns, but the left-hand side seems to be kind of promotions and banner ads, in effect, for various things. So even though we have the Better Business Bureau logo near the top in that header, it actually kind of gets lost because it's the same color as the blues and whites in the header. So it doesn't stand out that much. And the rest of the kind of visual look of the site really kind of undermines the perceived professionalism, I would say. We pick another site. This is a furniture store, and here we do pass the first impression test. It looks, use of pretty subtle colors, pretty professional, but subdued, inviting kind of home earth tone colors. But who are you folks exactly? What brands of furniture do you carry, or who are you associated with? There's really nothing here in this above the fold screenshot or the top of the page that tells me that. And ironically, if you go below the fold and you scroll down the page further, you'd see that they carry Broyhill and other major brands down there in that box, and that they have a lot of fans on Facebook and so on. Which is an example of the social proof, but you're not going to see that if it's down there and buried down below. Let me show you another example. This is the Hartford. And again, these are all URLs that you guys submitted, so fair game. A fairly professional-looking site, high production quality in terms of the images, but there's kind of an assumption here that because of all the TV advertising that people know who the Hartford is. And I'd like to see more social proof. How many people have used the Hartford? How many people have used it for investing? If you say over 1 million people since 1967 have used our advice, that would be very strong social proof. Melissa, I just want to pause there for a second. maybe get a couple of questions in?
Yeah, we do have some questions. Some of them are related to some stuff you mentioned earlier, but a couple people have mentioned this, so I kind of wanted to just get this one in. I guess the PetSmart Packer Safe logo has moved. Someone checked the site during the presentation, and it's now at the footer as opposed to where it was in the presentation. I guess people just want to know what's the best placement for something like that.
Well, I think that what you need to do with important trust marks, and I put Trust E and McAfee Secure and BBB Online all into that category, they should be definitely above the fold. So moving them to the footer, and in many cases you're paying for them, and they have real value, as Andreas pointed out. They can document it with case studies of list and conversion rate and revenue per visitor. So why would you hide them if you're paying for them and they influence people? Putting in the header or in the footer makes no sense to me whatsoever. Now, I will agree that it was in a non-standard place, and you don't necessarily want to replace your logo in the upper left with a trust symbol, but in the upper right in your header is a perfectly acceptable place to put that kind of thing, not buried in the footer.
Okay, great. I guess you could continue on.
Okay, here's another example. This is a college website, Spelman College, which focuses on educating African American women, and Bill Cosby is a big fan of this. The site itself, I must say, just in terms of production quality, again, that first impression is like, it's okay. It looks a little bit dated. It looks like it's kind of narrow. It's designed to fit into what I believe is an 800 wide monitor, which is kind of an old standard. So you want to give it some room to breathe, make it wider out to 1024, also raise the production quality. A lot of the links on the page are just text links. And the pictures, they're trying to humanize it, and those probably are real college students that have attended with the pictures. But I'd like to see, for example, one picture or a couple of pictures that indicate the presence of more pictures. For example, see our graduate gallery or alumni gallery or something like that. So if you're going to use faces, use them to lead to even more faces. How many graduates want social proof in terms of how many other people have attended this, people like me, and had a good outcome? Also, I think authority and trust can be borrowed here by people that have sponsored or contributed to the university or the college. Bill Cosby, I know, is buried deeper in the site and is an important contributor. Well, let's promote Bill up front as an authority figure. So there's some ideas on how to turbocharge that a bit.
Mm-hmm. Let me just ask another quick question from some of our listeners. What if you don't have any companies to use as authority sites? And also, somebody also asked if there's any legal considerations when using somebody's logo for, like, an authority site logo.
Okay, fair enough. So I get that question a lot, and I've presented in front of tens of thousands of people about this topic, and I keep asking, has anybody been busted for using a client logo on their site? And I had one person, exactly one, over the years say yes. That happened to me. One of our clients called and said, take our logo off the site, and they sent us a cease and desist letter from their attorney. And you know what they did? They took the logo off. No harm, no foul. I mean, generally speaking, for legal actions, you have to prove some kind of damages were caused by that logo being there. And I'm not saying go intentionally against the wishes of your clients. If you have a legitimate relationship with them, you can certainly use their name, unless it's specifically prohibited, on your site. Their trade dress and their logo, probably not formally without asking for it, but with some of these bigger companies, the ones you want, as marquee brands, it's a very tedious process that can take a long time and may not get you the outcome you want. So our general attitude is, as long as it's subtle and as long as it's like I said, not misrepresenting the relationship, go ahead and use it and ask for forgiveness rather than permission. Mm-hmm. But you didn't hear that from me, and if there are any lawyers listening in, I didn't say that.
Okay, we only have about a couple of minutes left, so maybe you could just do one more, and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay, I'll do a couple more.
I just want to say something really quick. Tim, would you be okay with answering some of these questions that came in after the fact? advice could send them to
Absolutely,
you?
Yeah, I'd be glad via email or to contact the folks directly on some of them.
Okay.
Probably not all of them. I know there's a lot, but a few of them certainly. Here's another example. This is a consulting group, Lewalt Consulting. I'm not sure exactly what kind of consulting they do, but I can tell you that I don't get a high trust factor here because of the stock photography. In the header, you have this kind of like some kind of blue streaky thing, and then the money. And then in the middle of the page, you have people sitting around the conference table smiling. And usually when I'm in meetings and there's that many people at the table, no one's smiling. So it's clearly a stock photography shot that they bought off of iStock Photo for a buck or something. And we've all seen it. So one thing in terms of trust and credibility, if they're pictures of people, they need to be real clients, or they need to be your staff, or they need to be your spokesperson if they're a celebrity. But don't just throw generic happy people pictures in there, because that actually undermines trust. And I just want to finish with one final example, and that is Lenovo. Some of you may have heard of this if you're familiar with the IBM laptops. Lenovo kind of bought those, so ThinkPad is now a Lenovo product, has been for years actually. So this is their site. Just want to look at trust. Now, even though they sell a lot of laptops and their dedicated users know about them, it looks like this site is about one product, the featured product. And then down below it says professional grade and lifestyle in red and blue. But in a way, other than the testimonial that you see there from Wired magazine right below the laptop to the lower right or to the right part of it, there's really no proof of how big you are. I'd like to say if you saw over 3 million satisfied customers or winners of the following awards from CNET and various review sites for your laptop and Consumer Reports highly rated, there's lots of opportunities to put trust in here. And instead, it looks like some product manager, kind of the promotion of the day idea, got a hold of the homepage and was able to get this huge chunk of real estate to feature just their latest product. So I think that quite a bit more of the room should be dedicated to building trust, saying, Lenovo, we're a trusted brand, and they certainly are, but there's really very little on this page to indicate that I should trust them.
Okay, great. Well, I think we'll have to wrap it up there, but I could listen to this all day. It's so interesting going through all these websites. So thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And I want to thank you, Tim, and Andreas, and, of course, everyone that listened for attending the Target Marketing our Target Marketing Retail Online Integration webinar. For additional information about the webinar series, again, you can check out retailonlineintegration.com/webinar, and please take a moment to fill out our feedback survey. Thanks again, everybody.